In the news.
Welcome to In the News for American and Texas Government. I'm Eric McDaniel.
And I'm Jim Henson.
Well, we have quite a bit to talk about. So, of course, we're going to start off with a discussion of the primaries. There are three caucuses this weekend. So you had Alaska, Hawaii, and Washington, and Bernie did well in all three.
Yeah, you know, he's continued his streak of furthering the impression that he's very good with the caucuses, better than that, and very good in states with a large white population, which all three of those have, I think. So, you know, he made up a little bit of ground, or he gained some delegates, but Hillary Clinton still has a pretty big lead in that race. Not a lot of news coming out of that race. I think a lot of the news was really both international and on the other side in the last week, chief of which was the terrorist attack in Brussels, over 30 people dead, also carried out by ISIS. And it really set the stage for a week in which we expected a lot of discussion of foreign policy and for foreign policy to dominate both races. On the Democratic side, Hillary Clinton did give a very serious, conventional in the sense of being somber in tone and very direct in talking about foreign policy issues in a very serious way. There was a little bit of that at the outset on the Republican side, but it didn't last very long, did it?
No, it did not at all. You had Trump basically talking about closing the border. Cruz talked about patrolling Muslim neighborhoods. And you had Kasich, it was like, look, you know, let's take a step back, which is interesting because, you know, the thing about Kasich is coming off as the, you know, soft-spoken, well-mannered guy. But anybody who knows him says that's not who we know. That's not the John Kasich we know.
Who is this guy?
Yeah, so it's really interesting to see how he's basically tried to be the voice of calm when historically he's known for being a pretty grumpy guy. But this has really forced a lot of thinking in regards to this. And so we have a slide regarding the timeline of the terrorist attacks.
Right. So what we've seen, I mean, this is from the New York Times, and this is just, we don't have to go through this kind of beat by beat. But what it does underline is why a lot of people that are serious about foreign policy and thinking about counterterrorism underline the fact that this ought to be taken pretty seriously. We've seen a string of attacks going back over the last year or so, spread around the world, including one in the United States, the San Bernardino attack. And so this seemed to set the stage, you know, once again for a kind of end to some of the things in the Republican race that people have thought of as borderline absurd and not serious, and just to call it what it is, that somehow Donald Trump's dominance of the discourse and in particular his shallow understanding of foreign policy would somehow be displaced by a more serious discussion. Now, you know, I think we expected that after Paris, it didn't happen. We expected it after San Bernardino, it didn't happen. We expected it possibly after Brussels, it hasn't happened. And instead what we got was a really crazy week in the campaign. And we say that all the time, and it just gets crazier as the candidates turn to focus not on Brussels, not on counterterrorism, not on foreign policy, despite the best efforts of elites, but rather Donald Trump and Ted Cruz got into a big spat that involved making fun of each other and saying mean things or implying mean things about each other's wives.
Yeah, and that's where you don't go. I mean, one of the things about it is, you know, Ted Cruz could upset Mitch McConnell, but he doesn't go home to Mitch McConnell. All right, so that's one place where you don't start a fight. So this is extremely interesting. Again, the fight started, and we mentioned this last week, when a political action committee posted a picture of Donald Trump's current wife, which basically said, you know, meet Melania Trump, your next first lady, or you could vote for Ted Cruz. This is actually said paid for by Make America Awesome, not authorized by any candidate or candidate committee. So they're separating themselves from this, but Trump immediately said, no, because Ted Cruz's name is in this, like Ted is after this. This is what Ted had done. And so you see a series of, they took to the Twitter, and which I think of as a place of nice harmonious agreement. Again, I'm new to the Twitter, and I've been told that this goes on quite a bit. And so you get a basically a back and forth between them. So Lion Ted Cruz just used a picture of Melina from a GQ shoot in his ad. Be careful, Lion Ted, or I'll spill the beans on your wife.
Now, that threat was really interesting because it's basically, you know, sort of the Trump campaign and Trump signaling that they have oppo or negative things on Ted Cruz's wife. And there is a thing that's been out in the public domain that Ted Cruz's wife had kind of a bout of light depression or something that involved kind of an incident in Austin several years ago where she was found sitting by the highway, kind of distraught. I think a lot of people looked at that and saw it as something that could happen to anybody. Nonetheless, it was a very kind of nasty wave in Cruz's direction. So, of course, on Twitter, Cruz replied relatively quickly, within an hour, less than an hour, hey, that pic of your wife was not from us, Donald. If you try to attack Heidi, you're more of a coward than I thought. And then hashtagged it classless. I haven't followed up on the classless hashtag. And so they were off to the races. So very quickly, there was another exchange. Within, you know, not very long, Donald Trump retweeted a GIF with a relatively unflattering picture of Heidi Cruz with a very airbrushed picture of Melania Trump with the tag saying, no need to spill the beans. The images are worth 1,000 words. We're in the GIF. You know, once again, Donald Trump, as he said in the forum last night, getting in trouble not for what he tweeted, but what he retweeted. Cruz responded on Twitter with a kind of attempt to say, hey, you know, he says, real men don't attack women. You know, essentially both our wives are lovely. Trump doesn't really take the olive branch or doesn't really take it as an opportunity to de-escalate because he doesn't really do that. Yeah. And says, I didn't start the fight with Lion Ted Cruz over the GQ cover of Melania. He did. He knew the PAC was putting it out, Lion Ted. Now, beneath this, there's also one slight academic point, which, you know, the super PACs that are in, the surrogates that are putting this out, give the candidates a certain amount of plausible deniability in situations like this. And as he, you know, like or not like Donald Trump, every now and then he does sort of say the things that nobody else will say, which is that, look, in this case, we know that candidates are, at least in campaigns, very likely aware of what the super PACs are doing. That's not universally true, but it's very plausible in the public eye and very plausible even to elites that, you know, the degree of division between the campaigns and the super PACs vary a lot, and it's very hard to control exactly how those relationships work. Well, that all seemed like it was absurd enough, and then still later in the week, we had another, you know, weird intrusion of what we think of as old media into this new media Twitter fight in the campaign. The National Enquirer, which I think some young people probably may or may not even know what it is, tabloid journalism, they ran a story saying that Ted Cruz had 5 secret mistresses. Now, the story was completely unsourced when you come right down to it. It was really a reporting of rumor. The Cruz campaign, of course, went, you know, ballistic. Cruz wound up having a very rare scripted press conference in which he accused the Trump campaign of planning this story. In part because the Trump campaign and Trump personally has a close relationship with the Enquirer. Trump issued a kind of non-denial in which he said, hey, I don't control this thing and, you know, I hope it's not true, but, you know, if it is, you know, Lion Ted has a problem. And the Enquirer, by the way, was right about, you know, some other things, John Edwards, yeah. Like John Edwards in particular in, what was that, 92, is that right? Or 2000.
So
John Edwards was a senator from North Carolina who ran for president, had a mistress, and that was revealed by the Enquirer. It's fair to point out that the Enquirer has been wrong about almost all of the UFOs, as far as I know, about the two-headed babies.
They're wrong 99% of the time. And so, now again, people have actually tried to follow up on this. They even accused one of Ted Cruz's aides, somebody who's actually actively working his campaign, of doing this. And so she's on TV defending Ted Cruz and like, right. Well, you're accused of this too. So all of a sudden she has to backpedal. Now, but again, the most shocking thing on this tabloid Inquirer, on the National Enquirer, is again that Blake is cheating on Gwen. I thought they would make it. But this is, again, you know, Blake has nine mistresses.
They seem so well-suited, yeah. Blake and Gwen, I thought.
Yeah, I mean, I had no idea they were together, but once I found out, I was like, oh,
I like the way that nine women gets the main spot and yeah. five, just you only get the top.
You need to step up your game, Ted. I'm kidding. But the key thing here is, you know, there's been no support for this, but the whole idea of Ted Cruz having mistresses was actually started by the Rubio campaign as well.
Right.
So it's not just Trump doing this, but the Rubio campaign started this. But this idea of, but also this idea of Ted Cruz doing dirty politics isn't new either. So Rubio's accused him of this, Ben Carson accused him of this. So like Cruz and Ben Carson had to have like a meeting in a broom closet before a debate to hash things out. So this idea of Ted Cruz doing dirty tricks has already been put out there. And so whether this is true or not, and be truthful, you know, the PAC for Make America Awesome, does it even exist? You know, Ted Cruz is like, I have no idea what's going on. But the problem is the seed of Ted Cruz being devious, things that has already been planted, and, you know, Trump can run with this.
Yeah, I mean the Trump campaign is always as define this its essential portrayal that they're trying to put out there about Cruz, the Lion Ted thing, and this really just drops right into that, and so they can continue to mine it as Trump did last night in the forum. You know, and I think it broadly, I mean, if we're thinking about how campaign works, this is one of those insider things that people doesn't see the light of day quite so much, but is essential to campaigns. When you're running a campaign, you have what's called an opposition research team, and they dig both real and potential negative stories out through research on their opponents, and then wait to use them and look at those files and figure out how they can construct the negative portrayal of their opponents. And that's not to say that this is, that, you know, so far there's not a shred of evidence in the public domain that this is true about Cruz, but it fits into this broader portrait that they're painting, as you were saying.
It's an extremely interesting, and this is where people are getting really upset about the current state of the campaign, that you think, okay, you know, with the hand jokes and things like that, and, you know, everything's fine downstairs, like, okay, oh, okay, we've hit a new low. No.
It keeps going.
There's room to go, so... Yay.
Yeah, so this really does, you know, I mean, it was really interesting how this all popped out when it did, given that, as we said earlier, there was a real expectation that, you know, as we were saying even in the last podcast, that the Brussels attacks would in a sense, turn the campaign in a different direction. And clearly that there was an effort at that. Donald Trump, for example, gave two significant interviews, one to the Washington Post, one to the New York Times, both of which were keyed on foreign policy, and both of which were panned. And if you think about the timing of this, these came a few days after, they were actually going on as the spat over the wives was breaking out. And Trump did a pretty terrible job in these and raised a bunch more doubts about foreign policy, at least among foreign policy experts and elites, whether that was gonna trickle down to the public or not, open question. But it did give us a chance to once again see how effective Trump is at changing the subject. So, you know, where in, you know, all things being equal, one might have expected the week to be dominated by Donald Trump saying that the United States should really reduce its commitment to NATO, his high tolerance of the proliferation of nuclear weapons. Lots of things that are really at odds with fundamentals of U.S. foreign policy and kind of what we think of as liberal internationalism, the idea that the U.S. has a central and active role in the world order. Instead, we saw the cable news dominated by the to and fro that we just described. And it really did underline just how effective Trump is at changing the subject, using material that you might not expect was usable, like, for example, the firing of his campaign manager.
Yeah.
Or the indictment of his campaign manager, the charges of assault being filed against him. He hasn't fired him.
Yeah, so, I mean, one of the recurring themes with Trump rallies is the use of violence. And so you had Trump aide was accused a while back of assaulting a reporter. And there's actually video of him kind of grabbing her and being somewhat rough with her. So he's actually been charged with assault. I mean, there were bruises that were there. There's actually been a lot of fallout within Breitbart, who the reporter worked for, regarding this. And Trump has actually come out and, you know, supported his, like, you know, said, well, how do we know the bruises weren't there already? You know, she may have been trying to attack me, you know, all kinds of other things. He was there for security reasons. And so this has raised somewhat concerns. And you have the more recent one that came out yesterday about a 15-year-old woman who was pepper sprayed at a Trump rally. And so, you know, to what degree, you know, she was assaulting someone else isn't really clear, but the idea that, you know, these things are going on. And this kind of changes, you know, you may get him in one thing, but he changes to something else. And so he's basically, you know, almost like my, you know, my six-year-old, whenever you corner with doing something wrong, you know, she's like, oh, look, there's a bird out the window. What? No, this is the subject. But he's pretty good at distracting people. And for some strange reason, the press seems like, you know, he jingles keys in front of the press. Then they're like, oh, okay, and just completely forget about what they were talking about before.
I love the jingly. Look at this shiny object.
Yes.
Yeah, there's something to that. So, you know, I think one of the things to think about there, too, is that if you look at, you know, what we have been calling Wifegate, if you look at the fact that, you know, they have filed these assault charges against Corey Lewandowski, Trump doubled down last night denying that, it really does speak to the ongoing discussion about gender and what women voters are going to do in the fall election. And speaking of the fall election, we mentioned Trump really doubled down in defending his campaign manager and in some ways that were hilarious, frankly. Nonetheless, he did use that pretty effectively to change the subject after another kind of rocky performance in response to some questions on foreign policy. The real headline out of that forum last night, though, was that Trump, following on Ted Cruz and John Kasich, both beginning to hedge on everybody's pledge a few weeks ago to support the Republican candidate in the general election, no matter who it was, Trump himself, who was really the core of that whole subject, because there's always been a worry that Trump would run as an independent if he didn't get the nomination, Trump basically hedged on his promise to support the GOP candidate, whoever it was, in the fall. So let's hear some sound on that.
More than 6 months ago, you pledged to support the Republican nominee, whoever that may be. A lot has changed since then. It sounded, when I was pressing Senator Cruz on it, sounded like he was saying he'd have a hard time supporting somebody who went after his
honestly,
wife.
Honestly, he doesn't have to support me. I'm not asking for support.
Do you want
the people's support.
Do you continue to pledge whoever the Republican nominee is?
No, I don't anymore. Look,
you don't?
No, we'll see who it is.
You won't promise to support the Republican nominee?
And he was essentially saying the same thing. Let me just tell you, he doesn't have to support me. I have tremendous support right now from the people. I'm way over 2 million votes more than him.
So the pledge you took is null and void. The idea of supporting whoever the Republican nominee is, you say you will no longer guarantee that you will support the Republican nominee.
I have been treated very unfairly. Look, I won the state of Missouri, right? No, I have. Cruz people. I've been treated very unfairly. I'll give you an example.
Unfairly by who?
I think by basically the RNC, the Republican Party, the establishment.
So again, you see the populism here again, where the idea that the establishment is attacking me, the people love me, the elites hate me. This is a very strong argument. And again, the idea of him running as a third party candidate is really worrisome to the GOP. But the idea that this pledge, you know, we all made this pledge, but he was like, look, if you treat me fairly, I'll stay. Right. But, you know, if you treat me wrong, and Ted Cruz had a point. He's like, wait a second, this man has personally attacked my family. So you're telling me to go out and support a man who's personally attacked my family is somewhat problematic. And John Kasich could say, you know, look, these individuals are so ideologically far from me that I can't see myself supporting them. Now, you know, again, this is the idea of a heated campaign that's become a personal campaign. Now, for the most part, you know, the fight is between Trump and Cruz with Kasich on the outside. It's going to be very interesting to see what happens when Kasich actually gets thrown into the fight. So right now it's a two-man fight with, you know, a guy on the side saying, come on, guys. But there, what happens if Kasich gets involved? Does all of a sudden the nice John Kasich we're seeing go to the John Kasich everybody expected of being somewhat gruff.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're in some ways Trump saying that he's changed his mind on this is maybe the most unsurprising news of the week. On the other hand, there are two things to really notice that are classic Trump in that. On one hand, we didn't have the segment of Cruz for reasons of time, but Cruz was very careful and didn't, you know, wouldn't quite say that he wouldn't support Trump. His line in the week is said, you know, you can't support somebody who, you have to really, you know, have second thoughts about somebody who would insult your wife and your family. But then when asked directly, so does that mean you wouldn't support him? He just said, well, what it means is that I don't think he's going to be the candidate and there would be problems. So he stepped right up to the edge without directly saying he wouldn't support him. And so in classic Trump style, two things. One, he just gets in front of that and tells Cruz, it sounds to me like you're being mealy-mouthed and you're not going to support me anyway, and I don't care. I don't need your support, you know. And then second, and the key word, and he does this very purposefully, is when he makes that argument that he was treated unfairly. If you go back to when Trump very publicly, after getting a lot of questions several months ago about whether he would support the GOP candidate, if it wasn't him, he said, I will do it as long as I'm treated fairly. If I'm treated fairly, it's fine. So the extent that he's going back to this argument that the party establishment is treating him unfairly, that resonates with his audience who has negative views of the party as an organization anyway, and it lays the predicate for him saying, look, I'm just doing what I said.
But also, I mean, this whole idea of making a pledge is a little bit weird because you didn't have that on the Democratic side.
Right.
You know, like, everybody raise your right hand and promise me, right. You know, and so it's also unfair to the GOP to stick to this pledge idea because you didn't ask this for the Democrats. Right. And I really wasn't happy with the pledge because it was like, this, yeah. We're not five.
Well, I think on one hand that's right, but on the other hand what it is, I mean, I think what's important about it is that it underlines just how divided they are.
Yeah.
And we've talked a lot about that division. The division, we'll talk about it more, I think, in coming weeks, I'm sure. You know, there's a real division mainly between the kind of traditional elite of the Republican Party, you know, who Trump is constantly thumbing his nose at, both in language and in his policy declarations, and the base of the Republican Party that is resonating with the positions of both Trump and Cruz. I mean, it's not a surprise that both of these guys are the candidates. So on one hand, the pledge is kind of stupid and seems pro forma. On the other hand, it's a real symptom that people are fundamentally worried about the Republican Party blowing apart in general terms, and more specifically, that if Trump is somehow denied the nomination, that he'll go his own way and definitely sink their chances in the general election.
Yeah, so we'll talk more about this next week and kind of the outcomes. So in particular, talking about the SCOTUS nomination, how that's developing, along with some of the issues going on at the state level as we talk about the state of the GOP over the next coming weeks. In closing, I want to take this time to congratulate the women's basketball team for making it to the Elite Eight. I know it didn't end the way they wanted to, but I want to thank Coach Karen Aston and her staff for basically bringing UT women's basketball back to national prominence. It's been a beautiful thing to watch, and I can't wait for next year. You've recruited great athletes, great students, and great people in general. So again, thank you so much for that successful season. So we will see you all next week. Have a good week.
I guess I'm supposed to say hook 'em here?
Yeah, hook 'em.
All right, hook 'em.
The Government 310 in the News podcast is hosted by Drs. Jim Henson and Eric McDaniel and is produced by the Liberal Arts ITS Development Studio and the Department of Government in the College of Liberal Arts at the University of Texas at Austin.